Welcome to Burrows and Burbs with hosts John Ingle and Roberto Cabrera. Over the next hour, you're going to learn some insider knowledge that will help you overcome and strategize in the cutthroat world of real estate. Now, here are your hosts, John and Roberto.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 108. We're in Costa Rica today. Very excited for our 108th show. With my partner in New York City, world headquarters, Roberto Cabrera. Say hello.
Hello, everybody. Buenos dias.
And Roberto said, I've got a friend who went down there and never came back. And that's Mike. So Mike Mallon, raise your hand. Say hi.
Hello, everyone. Buenos dias.
All right. And our special guests today, Brian Bratton and Bob Davey, both from Christie's International Real Estate down in Costa Rica. They're our experts. They're going to walk us through the geography, the real estate market of Costa Rica. But before I begin, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsors. Let's see if I can find them. Okay, here we go. I've got sharegracefarms.com. I'd like everybody to go and check out their Darjeeling, their teas, their coffees. It's for a good cause. All the money is going to Design for Freedom, where they are designing a more humane future. They are trying to eliminate forced labor in building material supply chains, and they're hosting conferences like the one you see on the screen there and bringing together thought leaders from around the world to try and clean up the supply chain. So I want to thank them. And I want to thank Voice America. We are being broadcast worldwide over the voiceamerica.com network. And there you see, we are live now on the Variety Channel. So thank you very much, Voice America. We love you. And with no further ado, let's just dive right in. Brian Bratton, how long have you been in Costa Rica and where did you come from?
So I moved to Costa Rica 20 years ago, this coming Halloween, I think was my very first thing as a full-timer here in Costa Rica. So moved from Atlanta, Georgia, and that stemmed from the availability of direct flights. And it led me to vacation here quite a bit, to the point where I ended up making a life change and made it a full-time gig.
And Bob Davey, how about you? How long have you been in Costa Rica?
I've been in Costa Rica a little over 30 years. I moved down here from Newport Beach, California. I was a general contractor. Came to Costa Rica to work. I had a project I was hired to come invest in and work running, and ended up buying a local expat's real estate company. And I had to buy his business and his store and all sorts of things. But all I wanted was his filing cabinet with all the listings. So it was successful and the rest was history from there. We've been selling real estate now, you know, for almost three decades here in Costa Rica.
Bob, I hate to break it to you, but we just did a show on Newport Beach, the most expensive zip code in America. And had you continued to sell real estate in Newport Beach, you might be retired by now. And last I heard, the weather is pretty good in Newport Beach. So what's the difference between the beautiful weather of and laid back world of California and the laid back world of Costa Rica?
Well, it's a great question. And it's basically part of the attraction for me here. It's still my home base and my family. You know, I have six relatives, brothers and sisters that live there. My parents were there, you know, all the time, and they've passed away recently. But it's most beautiful place on planet Earth. And it's a very similar climate to Costa Rica up in the Central Valley with that 75 degree year-round weather, basically, average weather, I should say. We're 85 degrees here in Guanacaste on the coast. If you're up in the Central Valley, that 70, 75 is the sweet spot there. That's what attracts a lot of people. But for Brian and I, who are surfers since we could graduate from a boogie board, the water's 85 degrees here in Costa Rica year round. And so I vowed to never put on a wetsuit to go surfing again and stuck to that.
All right. So key difference number one is that it's not the cold water of the Pacific. I'm pulling up a map. When you talk about Central Valley and you talk about surfing, could you tell us where in the world are we?
Okay, the Central Valley is San Jose. That's the capital city and all the suburbs around that. It's a higher elevation. It's about 1,000 meters in elevation. And so that's why you have this beautiful climate up there. And when you get to the coast, it's warmer. That's what, you know, most of the people are, or many of the people are attracted to the coast for that live outdoor climate. We can live without really air conditioning if you didn't want to.
Now, which coast, which is the better coast?
The Pacific coast, mainly because it's a lot more remote over on the Caribbean side, and it has a really long rainy season on the Caribbean side. It's absolutely beautiful over there, but a shorter tourist season and live around year season, as far as I'm concerned, and much more remote, more difficult to get there. So
that's the primary reason, because I was looking at everything that we're going to talk about, and everything was either from San Jose working west, and it's all along the West Coast. There wasn't one thing that we were going to talk about that was on the east side.
I can't even find a town on the East Coast. Why is that big, huge, I don't know, through a couple hundred mile stretch of beach not have any towns on it?
Well, it's mostly forest. There's an incredible town called Puerto Viejo, which is the really funky, laid back, reggae, tourist Costa Rica town. It's an international type destination, like most of Costa Rica, with all sorts of Europeans and North Americans, South Americans, very funky, laid back. And then Limon is the capital. It's a bustling city, totally different culture over there. That's the port city. It's really a workaby type area. And it's just kind of a tourist destination and not a real attractive live year round type place, except for the tourist attributes, which are the rainforest and the fishing and the funkiness of it all.
Is there a mountain range that's stretching from kind of like from Panama straight up towards San Jose?
Absolutely. Yes.
And that's, I'm assuming that's just a natural divider of not going east.
Yes, that's the continental divide, and it separates the Caribbean from the Pacific, and it's two different climates.
So are you two physically sitting in San Jose now? That's sort of headquarters, and you can sell anything from San Jose?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a base in San Jose. Our main bases are out on the Pacific coast. That's where the action is for our business, which is 99% foreign investors.
So the population of Costa Rica in general is about 5 million. And San Jose has about how many people in it? Because I'm assuming that's the most densely populated part.
Yeah, 4/5 of the population is in the Central Valley, centered around San Jose.
Okay. That's quite a few.
So both of you went down there on vacation and then stayed. It wasn't purposeful. Like, you went and did a spreadsheet of all the places where you could have a career. You just went down there and fell in love with it. Is that how it starts for most of us?
For me, no. I mean, it just became more and more of a place that felt like I could live there permanently. And I still had to figure out how to make a living. I was doing real estate investing in the US and then flipping into the real estate side and getting my brokerage license. Going through the training down here, hooked up with a great partner who had about 5 or 6 years in the market already and was fluent in Spanish. The market was great at the time, and it worked out.
So, Michael, you did the same thing. How did you eventually first go? Because I remember when we had first talked about it, and you said, "I've actually been going to Costa Rica, and I'm going to buy something there." And I kind of was like, "Really?" And that was what, 14 years ago.
14 years ago. It was a kind of a change in the workplace. And I talked to my brother-in-law and he goes, "I grew up with two guys from Westport, Connecticut. They live in this town, Nosara, Costa Rica. They run the Century 21 office. You should give them a call." So I gave them a call and they said, whatever you do, don't come September because it's kind of rainy. And back then, even the locals clear out. I went September because it's the only time I could go. And it was so verdant and dirt roads, muddy roads, and kind of desolate, but it piqued my interest. And then I went back and they go, come back in January. And that's, you know, sun shining, fishing, surfing, yoga, hopping on the quads, go zipping around. And that's kind of what piqued my interest, got to know folks. And the next year bought a place as a project and then started flipping a few properties down there.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, and 14 years ago, Airbnb didn't exist. I would imagine that Airbnb changed the whole paradigm when people like you went down there and said, I can see a way to monetize this. I've been coming on vacation. I can afford to buy a place in this market. And then if I wanted to recover some of that investment, I could put it out on Airbnb. Was Airbnb a game changer for small time investors, basically taking a look at Costa Rica?
I would say that the rental market in general was the game changer. Airbnb was a portion of that. And it depends on which segment of the market. I mean, Airbnb performs really well. And in certain unique, maybe more eclectic, more travel oriented properties, the luxury market, for me, plays better VRBO and direct bookings with luxury bookers. But certainly the revenue model that you speak of and being able to take a property and actually cover its expenses as well as actually make money. I mean, we've got properties that are really performing. It's changed things, definitely.
Give me an example. What kind of property is performing? Like sector? Apartment, house, what?
No, luxury homes that are, you know, 5, 6, 7 bedrooms that have ocean view, have easy access to the beach, maybe access to a beach club, oceanfront homes. You know, you've got family groups that travel together. You got multi-generational groups that travel together. So, you know, having the right amount, the right layout of the right amount of bedrooms and master suites or primary suites, that is, you know, throwing a bunk room in there so the kids can hang out. Those kinds of houses are booked 35, 40 weeks a year, even at very solid rental rates. And, you know, the owners may only occupy it, 2-3 weeks throughout the course of the year. They'll pluck their weeks that they want to use it. And, you know, when they come in, we have what we call owner protocols, right? So we'll have their sheets and linens and mattress protectors and pull that stuff out. Some owners want to use it more often than that, but you know, if they use it for a month, they've got the rest of the time for it to make money. And even so, though,
is that, just curious, is that a property where the owner came down, he bought land and built the house?
He could have bought an existing house and then sort of crafted it to his own liking. Or yes, we do a lot of, we have a lot of clients, especially now since, you know, after the pandemic, there was a shortage of really quality material. So we're doing a lot of custom builds and collection homes. There's a development that I work with in Tamarindo called Senderos. And Senderos, we have an architect's guild. We have clients that come in and sort of gravitate towards a particular architect. And, you know, 18 months later, after permitting, they've got a really nice luxury home with an ocean view. So there's a lot of that custom, semi-custom happening.
And what sort of budget do I need for that to accomplish what you're kind of describing?
You can get into the entry-level luxury market here from $1 million to $1.5 million for a single-family home. In the development Senderos that I'm speaking of, that's probably a $2 million conversation. And I think our highest sale in Senderos at the top of the mountain with the best view big house was $6.35 million. That same house, you know, Bob backed me up here, but that same house in Newport would be $60 million. Right.
You see it on the screen. So yes. Senderos, where is this? You're saying this is oceanfront or is this lakefront?
This is Ocean View. So it's less than a half a kilometer from the beach club, which is currently in permitting for the development. So it's very much a beach oriented, a lifestyle oriented community. I would say from the neighborhood, some people walk, but there's a lot of, you know, people grab a golf cart and head into town as well. So it's in the town of Playa Tamarindo, which is a little, eclectic beach town, surf oriented town. And Senderos pulls from what we call an architect's guild. So rather than just having an in-house architect, we've got multiple architects that each have their own flavor. This particular home is done by Richard Mueller that you're scrolling through here. Richard's a longtime staple in our area, but we've got five or six that we pull from, and we have, you know, certain architects have a certain aesthetic, and we let the clients gravitate towards which ones they like, and then we'll even take the collection home and then customize it from there. It oftentimes serves as a starting point.
And I see alongside those Senderos a $575,000 lot. It's only 423 square feet. Can that be true? But talk to me about this lot if I wanted to build my own home.
So that's a smaller, that project is called Punta San Francisco. It's Langa. It borders Langosta and Tamarindo Bay. The home sites are smaller in there. They're from, like you say, around 400 to, I think the biggest lot, maybe around 700 for an interior lot. The ocean fronts were maybe the biggest one was close to a half an acre. But you can see there's oceanfront, and then there's the interior lots. So those are that lot that you saw right there. That was a ocean view lot, mm-hmm. And you know, it's a little bit more appropriate to a villa versus an estate, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Those homes would perform very well in the rental market because, like I said, it's an oceanfront project. It's got three different beach accesses, and it does have access to a beach club as well. So those homes do well in the rental market. And it's just a different conversation than is something that's something like Senderos.
Can we step back just a second? So if you look at the coast, I noticed that a lot of what's going on is kind of in the northwest, as opposed to, not that there's not anything coming down the coast, but as you move further south, there were fewer things that we had like named that we would talk about. Is like, if I'm coming there and I'm deciding where I want to go, what would steer me more towards the south or towards the north coast?
Well, a lot of it has to do with accessibility. I mean, the Pacific Northwest has direct access to the Liberia International Airport, which enjoys a lot of direct flights. So, you know, if you can get off the plane and be in anywhere from, let's say, the Four Seasons is located on Peninsula Papagayo, just north of Playa Hermosa on your map there. That's probably a 45 minute drive maybe from the airport max, down to where Tamarindo is about an hour. Nosara is, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what, about 2.5 hours from the airport. It's a little more remote. Tamarindo areas, and then it's not on the map, but Santa Teresa is another very popular area that if you look on your map, it says Santa Fe would be to the left of that on the coast. And Santa Teresa is a beach area, but with all the with places that are a little bit remote, it's harder to access, let's say, everything you want on a regular basis. So there's no, there's less opportunity to buy retail. You have to think a little harder about, maybe buying a television. Now that's changing because things are growing and it's getting easier to handle logistics. Back 20 years ago, it was very difficult to handle the logistics of that. You had to go to the big city to buy things. So, but that is a consideration, access and just general livability, I would say.
So when we talked to the folks in Montana on the Montana episode, we said, what's the most important thing? And they said, probably being an hour or so from an airport, because rich people, ultimately, you know, the whole state's beautiful, but they have to be able to get there. And they said water. Water is really important because you, people want to do fly fishing when they get to, you know. So what are the two most important things? I would think getting to an airport is important. So when you talk about a great deal of this country being 2.5 hours from an airport, probably a lot of your wealthier investors cross that off the list and say, I don't have that kind of time. I need to be a little bit closer to civilization. So access to an airport, what else? Talk to me about the criteria that investors and yourself looked at.
Well, Nosara itself enjoys, and Costa Rica in general, has a lot of regional airports. So you can fly into Liberia or San Jose and then take a commuter flight for, you know, roughly $100 up to $150 each way, and then land right there in Nosara. Same in Tamarindo, same in relatively close to Santa Teresa. But that's a big factor for sure. And that's why we do get a lot of clientele that stick in that Pacific Northwest within that hour and 15 minute range from the Liberia airport.
Mike, you're in Nosara. How come?
Again, the story I mentioned, but you know, it's funny about the drive from the airport. People almost view that as part of the appeal. It's 2.5 hours. You're going to go from paved roads to dirt roads. You'll probably stop at a couple sodas to get beers and appetizers and really make an event of it versus hopping in and hopping out. Now, don't get me wrong. You do that trip a few times, it will get a little old, but it's probably one of the first stories you hear from any new person or new tourist coming to Nosara. Whoa, that ride was a lot, but you got to see a lot of interesting things from Liberia all the way down to Nosara.
So you fly into Liberia, and where can I get to from Liberia in one flight? LA, New York?
LA, New York.
Yeah.
Austin, Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, Miami. Help me out here, Bob. There's Denver.
There's six a day out of Liberia to Los Angeles. There's a San Francisco flight. There's Houston, both airports, because Southwest flies into Liberia from Hobby, and United flies in two flights a day into Liberia from Houston. They're adding a San Diego flight. You can get here from Chicago nonstop, New York nonstop, multiple flights from Florida. There's Orlando flights and
Toronto.
Those are to both airports, but Liberia Airport has exploded. It's a brand new facility. When you land, if you're with a carry-on and you're close to the front of the plane, you are in your transportation in 15 minutes when you land at Liberia Airport. That's a huge attraction for all of the people coming in here. There's a lot of facilities for private jet traffic, which is part of our business down here. But having that airlift into Liberia is a game changer. And having that really modern world-class airport there is as well. It's a good point that you brought up about airport, because all the way down in the Central Coast to the Panamanian border, there's wonderful towns. Dominical and you name it, going all the way down. And the people, it's a different demographic. I mean, they choose more of the adventure, like what heard from Mike. It's more of an adventure to drive those long paths, because you can't really fly down there. Capos has an airport, so you can fly into Capos, but the rest of that coast is really remote. And that is the appeal for those people. They choose that. It's a more tropical location down there. We're finding that the luxury market and the people that want to get in and out quickly are coming into Guanacaste, Northern Guanacaste, because of that airlift and because you can be in your home or in your hotel or in your rental within a couple of hours. And most everything is within an hour. The high densities within an hour of the Liberia airport, but that's starting to spread out a little more all the way down to Santa Teresa. Those people are taking 3-hour drives to get there.
So tell me this, if I'm going to look to, you know, Central America, find a place, why Costa Rica as opposed to Panama, as opposed to one of those other places? Like, what is it about Costa? What don't I know that everybody knows and everybody's going there? What is it?
Let's give one answer each real quick, Brian, on that. Mine is, I look at a place and I say to myself, would I raise my family here? Costa Rica checks all the boxes for being able to raise a family, all of the private schools, English first language, all of your amenities, expat community, this wonderful culture, all these different languages spoken.
Well, that's part of the one of the biggest reasons for our explosive growth in the since the pandemic is what Bob alluded to. You know, we've got really good private schools here, and there's a lot of them, and it's actually created more. So you have a full time as opposed to a seasonal populace now, and it's really interesting thing to see. You're also finding people that because of the airlift, you're getting that people can live here full time and then travel for work. So it's kind of the script has been flipped. But one of the interesting things, direct to your question, was we don't have the versus a Caribbean location. Costa Rica doesn't suffer the threat of a direct hit of a hurricane on the Pacific coast. We're more where hurricanes start. So we'll have a rain event and then it'll just go offshore and do its business somewhere else. So so not being in the path of that kind of devastation is a differentiating factor for Costa Rica.
Any earthquake activity there? Anything like that?
We do have earthquakes, but the quality of the builds here in Costa Rica, it's all concrete and steel. It's all done to a very high seismic code. You would be very surprised. You could do an entire podcast on building in Costa Rica and the quality associated with it, the amount of engineering that goes into it.
Talk to me about safety. I think a key attribute of your brand is safety. And I think that, you know, a lot of places are losing their charm. Certainly Mexico has been hit hard with a lot of news stories in America. A lot of our favorite resorts in Mexico, people are afraid to go there. And yet you say, well, why are you going to Costa Rica? Well, it's safe and it's clean, ecologically friendly, but mainly they talk about the safety. Talk about safety and how do they accomplish that? It's a major part of your brand. And you just showed me a place where I could spend 2.5 hours in my car from the airport to get to my house. And I would imagine that that's a very remote, very desolate. How do they maintain safety across an entire nation like that?
Well, John, I would say that safety is the number one factor. Costa Rica is a big draw because of the real docile people, friendly. They don't identify themselves as different from anybody else. We're all just neighbors to everybody here. So there's very little crime in Costa Rica. We like to brag that we really don't need to lock our cars or our houses, but you know, you do because it's smart. So the government doesn't have an army, but they do have a police force, different layers of police force from the real, you know, really bad guys that, you know, how to take care of a bad situation to just docile, kind of checking IDs, making a presence type police. Costa Rica recently has had a spat of bad publicity regarding crime, and it's really unfair to the country because Costa Rica is a bridge for the drug industry that's moving to North America and Europe. They're taking their drugs elsewhere. So we're a bridge where drugs are going through here. So there's bad guys here and the bad guys are killing each other every now and then. And those make headlines that get publicized, like, you know, we're not Chicago, but it seems like it with some of these headlines. We don't see any of this crime. We don't see these murders. I mean, those are the bad guys in the bad neighborhoods killing each other. And for us, I mean, we drive around, we go to our restaurants, we go to our parties, we go to the school events, And none of that exists in our world.
I would echo that. Yeah, I mean, I raised two children here, and we walk around town, we go to dinner, we do everything, and we feel overwhelmingly safe driving from any destination to any other destination. I've just, in 20 years, I've never had a problem, and we just don't see it. And so, yeah, safety is key.
Are you getting people now more than ever? Because I'm going to tell you that in America, particularly in some of the cities, you know, there's a great deal of anxiety, right? There's homeless people in the streets of New York, San Francisco, a lot of our major cities. And people are saying, I got to get out of the city and I got to go someplace because of safety. It occurs to me that this is a decade in which safety is really more than ever something you can trade on. And are you seeing people coming for that reason more than ever?
For sure. Not only just day-to-day safety, but also people feel like, you know, it's a neutral country. There's no army. There's no guns pointed at Costa Rica. So from a geopolitical perspective, as well as a day-to-day life, it's just not in our sphere. Like the whole way of life is not centered around that. It's centered around a healthy, active lifestyle, going to the beach, taking care of your family and friends. And it's just not in our daily focus.
You guys are full-time residents. Are you guys in San Jose?
No, we're both on the coast. So Bob's Flamingo, which is 30 minutes north of Tamarindo. We're in the sort of same area, zip code, so to speak, but just slightly different. You know, Tamarindo's a surf town. Flamingo's got the marina. But all the kids would go to a similar, one of, you know, four, five, six private schools.
So how often do you go to San Jose, and why would you go? How long does it take you to get there?
Well, San Jose, you can fly there in 45 minutes on a commuter flight. You can drive there in about 4 hours. It's nice to go to the city. I mean, if you live here full time, rolling into the city, going to different restaurants, getting a different climate. San Jose is beautiful. It sits in a teacup valley surrounded by volcanoes and rainforests. There's a mall to go shopping and get your retail fix on. So, I mean, in the dry season, you can actually fly in on the 6 a.m. flight, grab an Uber, have a whole day of shopping, and fly back on the 3 p.m. flight. And it's like driving just down the road somewhere else.
So tell me about that. 45-minute flight costs how much? Dinner at a really great restaurant costs how much?
They do resident rates at around $80. $100 to $120 would be an expensive ticket if I had to buy it. $150 would be the peak each way. And then, Uber or a taxi is very inexpensive. There's private drivers that you could take around as well. Go and do a nice dinner at like a unique sort of culinary place would be, you know, depends on your bar bill, of course, but leaving that out of it, $100 or something like that with a couple of drinks and a nice dinner plus tip, you can spend a lot more money and you can go to places that cost more money. And there are those options. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I'd go to San Jose and just spend 3 or 4 days eating really good food. Some of it locally inspired and some of it internationally inspired. But again, also there, when you live in paradise and you live at the beach and, you know, you may live at the end of a dirt road or you may live, in a small town, you know, it's nice to have that variety and the ability to take that commuter flight or just drive the car, you know, listen to some tunes, have a conversation with your friend or your person, then you've got, then you're in the city, you've got your car. So maybe that's a better thing if you want to spend 3 or 4 days there. Maybe go see a specialist at the doctor. They've got really good hospitals there and specialists. We do have good healthcare on the coast as well. But, you know, when you get into maybe some more specifics, you want to go into San Jose, into the city. So you might combo that trip and spend a little more time.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. So Mike, when I talked to Michael earlier, he was talking about when he first went there, it was a real sense of community. He got to know the locals. He knew everybody. But it's progressively become more and more say, American, everything. And there's people coming in, especially with COVID, that people were mobile. So a lot of people have come to Costa Rica, good or bad. But it's become less of like, I'm getting away, as opposed to, wow, we're all here now.
There's a lot of like Florida. Does it feel like Florida yet?
No.
Okay. All those Americans coming south, you know.
But talk to us a little bit about that, Michael, just about your experience.
I think you summarized it well. You know, two years ago, it's kind of joking. I'm a friendly person. I'll walk down the beach, hola, and you get a response. I wasn't getting a response. So then I'd get like a vendetta. I'm like, I'm going to make people say hola to me. But it's funny. I was walking down the street and a guy was coming on his quad, said hola. He stopped and he goes, you're the first person who said hola to me. I used to come down here 10 years ago. No one says it anymore. But you're seeing more and more people walking at the beach at sunset with the earbuds doing work. You know, it's turned into, especially with COVID, the digital nomad experience. And they're kind of getting the best of everything. Work with one of the most beautiful sunsets in the world every day. And that's what people do, go to the beach at sunset. So I think it's just, it's a growing pain. I think if anything for realtors to try to get people buying property to become part of the community. Say, you know, this is not what expected of you, but we'd like for you to participate as you can in civic associations or fundraisers or the school. I think it's important part just to get that versus others may just say, build as big as you can, make as much as you want, and then move on. And for a smaller town like Nosara, you feel the difference. You truly do.
Talk to me about the market. I get the perception that there's plenty of space. I mean, if anybody who watches this show for the last, 6 months is going to see a recurring theme. I've got no inventory. That's Palm Beach. That's Vero Beach. That's California. It's Connecticut. There's just no inventory. We have a housing shortage here. It looks like you have plenty of space and people are building and very optimistic down there, but it doesn't look like you're scarce of inventory. What's the inventory situation?
We have an inventory problem of quality products. So the luxury market in particular, if you want a really nice house, you're either going to build it custom. You might find a gem that just came to market that gets snatched up pretty quickly. But otherwise you're in for a renovation. So you have to have the conversation with yourself. Do you want to go through a renovation and peel back the layers and get into surprises? Or do you just want to start from scratch and get exactly what you want in a custom or semi-custom situation?
We have an inventory problem in Tamarindo, or you will have it in Tamarindo, Flamingo, Nosara, San Jose, everywhere.
So Nosara has an inventory problem, Tamarindo. You can get into the, so listen, Tamarindo, 20 minutes south, and you can be in a place where there's less people and it's more remote and dirt roads. And there's probably more inventory there, but it's hard to encapsulate in a tight conversation like this, I guess.
But if a wealthy American like me goes down there and he finds that he wants to be in a place like Tamarindo, you're saying scarce inventory of quality product. So these Americans probably go in and say, well, I'll just pay more because you just told me about how inexpensive it is to live down there. So have wealthy Americans been going down since COVID and driving up the prices like they have been in Palm Beach?
Yes, and Canadians have as well. Let's not leave the Canadians out. They've been coming here. They love the weather, and they've got direct flights as well. So those are our two primary bases.
How about Europe?
We have a lot of Europeans down here. They're not as many as the in Canada. But we've got lots of folks from Europe. Absolutely. It's a very international community. I mean, everyone from the European continent. We've got, I mean, one of my architects is South African. We've got Israelis. We've got, I mean, people from all over. I always say, if you go to a dinner party down here, it's like a model UN.
So in a market like Tamarindo, are the prices escalating in the double digits for the last couple of years, 2-3 years? Are you seeing 15% price increases year over year, each of the last 3 years?
Yes.
More?
In certain pockets, yeah, I would say. I don't know. There was a, we had an interesting thing in Tamarindo Langosta where there was this glass ceiling of $3 million for oceanfront homes, and maybe you kick it up to 3.2 or something like that, but nobody was paying $4 million. And that got broken down, and, you know, people are paying $4 and $5 million now as opposed to $3 million. So there's an example there. People are paying
for better houses or for the same product?
More or less the same product. I mean, it may have been a renovated product home, but a lot of it is too. I mean, there's a scarcity of oceanfront. So when you get down to really what's available, an oceanfront piece comes up. So, you know, people are a lot, it's probably going to get snatched up at a higher price, even if it was renovated or not renovated.
So something like that you're talking about, 3 million, three and a half, what is the, how much property is that house have? Is that an acre?
It's the oceanfront lots in, let's say, for instance, Playa Langosta are from 1,000 to 2,000 meters. 2,000 meters is a half an acre.
Okay.
What's the financing world like there? How much is cash? What can you borrow? How does that work?
It's primarily a cash market. I think most of the deals we do are cash deals. Financing, or at least something resembling what a U.S. or Canadian finance program would look like, is just starting to sort of creep into the market, and people are doing deals with banks, but it's few and far between, and you got to jump through a lot of hoops. And at the end of the day, you're ending up at 8.5% with some other weird charges, origination charges and things of that nature. So, you know, most of the high net worth individuals or people, they'll stretch and they'll find a better way to borrow money and come down here with cash. That's the generally what happens. But I feel like it is changing, and it's starting to come in.
And how about the real estate transaction laws? I mean, like, it's legendary that if you try to buy in France, good luck if you're not French. I mean, you got 17 different attorneys, all specialized and part of the guild. How do transactions go in Costa Rica?
It's very clean. We have a national registry, and because you're not involving banks and financing, you know, the due diligence process is what it is. We go through it, we figure out how to sort out those details. The titles are clean. It's generally, of course, there are always exceptions, but it's generally a pretty smooth process.
Scott, I would add that to answer your question, Costa Rica doesn't recognize a nationality. You can purchase real estate from wherever you are, and you can purchase real estate in your personal name or in an entity as a different type of corporation, a family trust. So it's wide open in that respect. There is conventional mortgage financing. It's limited. It's usually starting at about 40% down payment minimum, but it is available through private banks down here, even the national banks. That's a little more cumbersome of a approval process, but, you know, it's really getting sophisticated and easier. But it is, like Brian said, mostly a cash market. 9 out of 10 transactions are cash. So we have a different type of.
What sort of transactional costs are there, in the sense of, like, is there a tax? Is there not a mansion tax necessarily, I can't imagine, but is there? What are the transactions? What don't I know? I'm coming there to buy. I've got $2 million. What are the soft costs on that?
Let me interrupt for 1 second. I apologize that I have to jump, but I have to say that I hate this podcast because I love Costa Rica and I don't want anyone else to go there. It's a spectacular place, wonderful and awesome. And you guys have been very informative on the real estate side. Thank you, guys.
It's pretty good, Scott. Closing costs are 3.5% to 3.8% of the purchase price. Your property taxes are a quarter of a point, so 0.25% of your registered value of your purchase. So for instance, that's $2,500 per million for your annual property tax. They have a luxury tax. The luxury tax is for properties over $400,000. So that's at about a quarter of a percent. It's not on the total value of the property either. They have a small percentage of the land value on that. And so they use all of your improvements to calculate the luxury tax. So all of these taxes are really low. Closing costs and legal is really low compared to competing markets that we have, like the Caribbean and Mexico, Cabo, Hawaii. Everything is really streamlined here and much more reasonable.
We got about 5 minutes to go. Before we dive into that, I'm going to ask you your predictions for what the market has in store, including Mike, for the next 5 years, 10 years. But before I do, I want to say, if you like this kind of show, tell your friends, like, subscribe, share it, you know, let people know, because we're not getting paid to do this. We do this, Roberto, because we love it, right?
Exactly. It's fun.
So help us spread the word. All right. Let's do some predictions. I mean, we've just watched the market take off in America, double-digit increases in price in most of these high-end markets. And we've seen inventory down by two-thirds in many of these luxury markets. We're beginning to see some softness in some of these markets. So with that sort of backdrop, I mean, and it's a little bit hard to measure at the very ultra-luxury in something like Palm Beach. When I ask them, they say no softness whatsoever. We still have several $50 million sales. They're not admitting to any softness at the ultra luxary markets. Roberto just sold a $41 million townhouse in New York, and he's probably going to go sell another one next month. So talk to me about any perceived softness in the market. Are we heading for a crash?
I'd like to say we're a cash market and we feel bulletproof. You know, we weren't bulletproof in the 08 crash. We were bulletproof up to that. 9/11, we took off like a rocket.
Why? COVID. Safety? Why? 9/11 in particular. Everybody said, oh my gosh, America's falling apart. Heads up.
Exactly right. Same thing that happened with us with COVID. It's we are a destination. We're safe. Where do we go? How do we go somewhere safe, protected? Costa Rica is wholesome. Costa Rica is healthy. We live farm to table here. We don't worry about security here. That's why Palm Beach has taken off. People are going, I'm going to pay a premium, move to Palm Beach. It's safe. And that's what's happened in Palm Beach. That's what's happened here in Costa Rica. But we do live farm to table with our food. Our health is our wealth. Our lifestyle is what we sell. Our exercise is outside. We don't need a gym, but there's gyms everywhere. But we're just this magnet to all of the wholesome environments that everybody's looking for.
But what would cause the market to falter? I mean, now I'm excited because it sounds like when the world looks like a crisis, you benefit. Well, when does it start to, when does it get harder? When the world calms down, everybody goes back to Florida?
Well, when people's purses snap shut, you know, we feel it. But we have a unique client base where it's usually expendable income because it's a cash economy. So when somebody has to rely on a refi or some kind of debt service, debt to bring their funds down here, that's what slows us down.
I got one for you. Demographics. I understand when baby boomers were retiring, they all went and bought a second home in Costa Rica, but there's a whole lot fewer baby boomers than there used to be. And now it's the millennials who are all turning about 40 and starting to have families. Are you getting your fair share of millennials?
Yes.
Our market, the wealth in these millennials is impressive. And they're coming down here looking for alternative education and culture for their children. They can work offline. I mean, it's two parent households or two working parent households. They rotate on who's flying back to their meetings and going to, you know, be face to face with somebody. It's amazing at these young families that are down here and they're operating and interacting with however they need to regarding being in Europe, South America, North America. I mean, it's a whole different world with the millennials right now because of everybody being unwired. Unplugged.
But it's because of the backbone of that at the private schools. I mean, we've got a robust amount of places for kids to get a quality education, and it's a big deal.
Robert just described all of my neighbors, no joke. And 20 years ago, my friends opened a Montessori school in Nosara. It's got over 350 students, over 50 faculty administrators. So instead of waiting for your kids to finish college to retire, they're saying, let's do this now, get the kids into a multilingual school with friends from around the world. We still get to surf yoga in between work and picking them up. It's staggering. And I think just the workability of being online, two incomes, maybe one has to scoot back to the United States once in a while. But, you know, Nosara is 50% of that type of demographic.
So it sounds like a better time than ever before, because 20, 15 years ago, there was no school. Now we've got established a school with 350 people. And you're saying we've got critical mass here in Nosara. So it's a little less scary. It's a little less remote for the American millennial considering it.
Correct.
You know, John, I have two friends that are professors at Stanford University. And 12 years ago, they moved down here for 3 years with their young twins because they wanted to entrench them in Spanish. So they entered them into one of the private schools we have here, the two of them in the same grade. They made sure they got extra Spanish because it's English first language. In 3 years, these two children were totally conversing in Spanish. Both of those children now are in university up in the US. And that couple has invested in three properties with us. And they think they made the best decision of their life for their children when they did that. But this is an older couple with young children that are very calculated in all the decisions that they make. And it was interesting to me to see how that plan worked out so well.
They moved down there for the Spanish just about the time Mike said everybody stopped saying hola to each other.
Oh, that's right.
So we only have a couple minutes left. We're down to our last 2 minutes. Final thoughts, gentlemen. Why Costa Rica? I mean, it's safe. It's easy to get to with a direct flight. It's still cheap with a nearly glass ceiling of $3 million. What have we missed?
What is the tax bracket in Costa Rica? How much you pay in taxes?
Taxes. We have a question on taxes. I think Yvette is sold. She pays a lot in taxes, clearly.
Well,
so what's the tax situation?
If you work down here, if you have an income, it's around a 20% income tax in Costa Rica. But I just answered the question about property tax. Did you want to know about property tax or transactional tax? What kind of tax would you like to know, Yvette?
Earned income.
Yeah, so income, if you're going to come down here and have a job and you're going to pay Costa Rica.
A business.
So a business is about a 20% income tax.
Excellent. All right, we're down to our last minute. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks, Bob. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mike. How do people find you if they're interested in learning more about Costa Rica?
Well, we're on our websites. Go to CostaRicaChristies.com. We're on Instagram with Christies Tamarindo and Costa Rica Christies. You can Google either one of our names and, you know, the pages will fill up with really friendly, nice information. So watch us catching fish and surfing and doing all sorts of things, our lifestyle.
Excellent. Thank you. This was a great show.
Guys, thank you so much.
I'm glad there's still room in Costa Rica for Roberto and I. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. Bye. See you guys.
Take care, everyone.
All right, great job. Bye. We're all clear, guys.